was frightening.
Coming up, we look at the local impact of the newly signed Big Beautiful Bill. Plus, how will you vote in the big Frank White recall election? And kicking the can down the road yet again on the stadiums. Kansas leaders now giving the Chiefs and Royals till New Year's Eve to show their hand. Plus, didn't see this coming. Is KCI about to become Truman International Airport? Those stories and the rest of the week's news straight ahead.
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Dave and Jamie Cummings, Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
Hello and welcome. I'm Nick Haynes. Glad to have you back with us. You know, we take the 4th of July holiday off, and guess what happens? All hell breaks loose. Firstly, we've got a whole new Week in Review set, and as you can see, it's more than just a fresh lick of paint. But even more strikingly is the monumental news that's been breaking this week. Helping us make sense of it all over the next 26 minutes is the head of the Kansas City Star editorial board, Yvette Walker. At the helm of our metro's newest newspaper, Next Page KC, Eric Wesson, tracking the region's top political news for KCUR, Brian Ellison. And he said he retired from the Star, but his byline seems to be in the paper more now than when he worked there full-time, Dave Helling. Jackson County voters now have an executive decision to make. Do they want to oust their top leader, Frank White? The signatures have been verified, and county lawmakers voted unanimously this week to hold a special recall election a little more than 6 weeks from now on August 26th.
It's not about personalities or politics. It's about ensuring that we follow the law and the Jackson County Charter and give the respect and the voices of our residents.
Let's put this into perspective first, though, Dave Helling. Is this a remarkably rare moment in local politics? Has there been a high-profile election like this to oust a public leader in modern memory?
It's been it's rare, but not unique. You may recall about 20 years ago, Sandra McFadden Weaver, who was on the Kansas City Council, was subject to a recall, which she won, by the way. She was reelected in that election. The rules are a little different, Nick, in Kansas City than Jackson County. But it is very rare in Jackson County, in part because the number of signatures needed is so immense. You need 40,000 or, 45,000 valid signatures. That's very hard to get in any recall election. So, yes, this is historic in several ways.
You know, Eric, I saw that the peculiar mayor in Missouri decided this week he was going to resign as there was impeachment talk. He might be forced out of office. And people resign in advance of that when it gets to the serious stage. Any evidence Frank White will just say, I'm going to resign, retire early?
No evidence of that whatsoever. And he's, I want to say, campaigning now, even with his press releases saying that, you know, this is all about the stadiums and it's about this, and Phil Lovato wants to be a judge and he wouldn't make the position available. But I want to remind our viewers that this recall started long before the stadiums. People had gotten fed up with Frank White and his leadership during the period of time that they were getting their assessments.
The jail.
Those are the things that people are frustrated about, and those were the things that they signed a petition.
Okay, well, let's look at his own words. And this is his statement this week. This was the money line. This whole effort is, quote, about clearing the path for a stadium deal that voters rejected and removing the one person who stood up and said it was a bad deal for taxpayers. Is that true, or is there more to it than that, Yvette?
Well, that's certainly what he's saying, but it seems to me that people may care about the stadiums, but they care about their budget more so than that. So I would say that if we had to say which was the bigger lift here, it would probably be the assessments.
So what happens then with an election on August 26th? This is what we're told, though there are efforts to try and possibly delay that, saying it's too challenging to put on an election in advance of that time. But if there was an election and people voted yes to oust Frank White, is he out at the end of the day?
He is not out at the end of that day, but pretty quick thereafter, okay. As soon as the election is certified. You do not have to wait, and the position is declared vacant immediately. There's a process set up in the county charter for how to replace him. First, initially, for on a very temporary basis, by appointment of the county legislature chair. Then, for the remainder of the term, by someone who has to be confirmed by the full county legislature by a majority vote. They will serve until the end of 2026.
But even before that, though, we're told that Frank White could actually veto the measure to have the election. Can he do that?
Well, we'll see. That is not clear. There will be a judicial intervention in this entire process, in part because the election board is saying that we don't have time in 6 weeks, potentially, to put this matter before voters. Whether or not the executive can veto the election ordinance is not clear. It's the process in the charter is not self-executing in that way, and so there'll have to be some sort of intervention to figure it out. But I think, barring a complete turnaround, there will be an election sooner rather than later on whether Frank White will be recalled. And by the way, just a quick note for history. He became county executive, replacing Mike Sanders through the very process that would be used if he's ousted from office.
Is there anyone in Kansas City right now who is salivating over being the next Jackson County executive? I haven't even heard of any candidates coming forward at this point.
It has to be a Democrat, by the way.
Okay, why does it have to be a Democrat?
The charter requires the commission to pick someone, the legislature, to pick someone of the same party of the ousted executive.
I don't know if they're salivating about it, but Dan Tarwater, he wants to put his hat in the ring.
Here we go.
Former legislator, yep.
Yeah, and Deron McGee is rumored, although I asked him that at the press conference the other day, and he didn't say whether he wanted to or not. He just wanted to get through this part of the phase. But I want to say one more thing. You know, Frank White is saying that the people, this is about the stadium, but the same people that voted no on the stadium are the same people that pushed the recall petition. So you can't say that it was about the stadiums because it's really not.
What happens, so if he is recalled, there has to be another election then to vote for a new executive. Could he decide to run in that?
Well, he could, but that election will not take place until the general election, which would have occurred anyway for that position. So the person who is appointed and confirmed by the legislature will actually serve out the rest of what would have been Frank White's term. So it's actually a very significant decision on the part of the legislature.
Does the charter allow, if he resigns, that he keeps his pension? Versus if he's voted out and recalled.
I don't think the pension speaks to that. There may be some legislation, but I don't think the charter itself enacts any penalty on a recalled official other than you leave office.
Okay. Because that's one of the rumors is that he would resign rather than lose his pension as the former county executive.
There are some different provisions in the charter depending on whether a person leaves voluntarily or is removed from office for one reason or another. And so that might be those might be considerations he's making. And to your question, Nick, of whether he could run in the election in 2026, that's not actually spelled out in the charter. It does not appear to me from a reading of the charter, which I happen to have pages of right here, that it is actually prohibited. Now, whether that's a wise political move for him after all the water under this bridge is a good question.
Well, okay. It also might depend on the mandate. We'll see how many voters come out and what that vote is.
That would be the only thing on the ballot. Aren't there only going to be the people who have an axe to grind who don't like him who are going to go to the polls?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what recall elections are all about. But there are a lot of people angry at Frank White for a myriad of reasons. And it is difficult to envision, Nick, what his argument will be to stay in office. What has his success been? What has he done that
he
has
made
He
was a rather remarkable Royals baseball
yes,
player.
Yes, but what has he done to make the county better in any way? The tax situation is very problematic. The jail we mentioned, the stadium's problem,
budget.
The budget itself is a mess. It's hard to envision what his argument will be for retention other than somehow they're out to get me.
To Eric's earlier point, though, one of the interesting pieces of this to me is that there isn't an obvious person to take his place. No one, it does not appear, at least outwardly, that anyone's been jockeying for that position. And that might be a reflection of just how much confusion, dysfunction, choose your word, there has been in Jackson County government now on that myriad of issues that Dave mentioned. And I think that's where we find ourselves in a position of real uncertainty even as we go into the recall election.
Okay. Yesterday he said Phil Lavota, who is the lawyer pushing to have the election held on the 26th, he said that he wanted the position, and then he wanted a judgeship. He didn't get the judgeship, so then he came up and it became part of the recall. But it'll be an interesting battle. Get your popcorn and your cold drinks ready, because it's going to be interesting.
In other big news this week, top Kansas lawmakers agreed to extend a massive incentive office of the Kansas City Chiefs and Royals, the Legislative Coordinating Council that makes decisions when lawmakers are out of session, voted 7-0 to give the teams until New Year's Eve to lock in a deal with Kansas that would fund up to 70% of new stadium costs with public money. So what does all of this mean? We're just kicking the can down the road for another 6 months, Dave?
Yes, at least potentially down the road. I do think the Royals have said for some time that they want to clarify their stadium situation this summer. And so we're in the middle of this summer. We'll see if they step forward now. The Chiefs said after the vote in Topeka that they need more time to work out the minute details of their agreement, even though they've had a year to do it. So I think we'll have some clarity in 2025.
Now, if you thought this whole thing is head-scratching, then watch Chiefs President Mark Donovan try to clear the air and explain what happened.
As I said, we're making great progress on both sides. They're different deals. And once we have all the details, which is the phase we're in right now, it's literally details, final definitions, exactly that we're all on the same page. And then we'll take that information and we'll make the decision.
Oh, now it's all clear. Are you any of the wiser, Yvette?
No, not at all. Not at all. And my goodness, I have to wonder if there's a certain amount of fatigue that is happening. You know, another 6 months. Yes, we want to keep our teams in Missouri. Of course we do. However, there is a certain amount of fatigue, I think, that's beginning to happen.
Nick, I was going to say it's really a shame that you got a new set, because otherwise we could have just replayed the tape of one of the last few times we've talked about this. No one would notice, because really the uncertainty has been the theme and it continues to be. What I do start to detect, I think, is that the leaders in Kansas and Missouri are starting to be a little more vocal in their annoyance with how long this is taking and their frustration with the teams. I don't know if that's going to impact the final outcome or not, but I think the teams might want to start moving toward actual proposals, or they may not have as much leverage.
We may not want to watch Dick Clark's special New Year's Eve celebration with Ryan Seacrest these days, because we're waiting for the news, that announcement on New Year's Eve from the teams. They're going to tell us where they're going to be moving, right?
Hopefully. They come up with something before then. It's still, the Jazz District is still a conversation. That would be in Missouri. But they're dragging this on, and I think people are becoming more and more disengaged and more excited about the possibility.
Now, we are getting a lot of comments from viewers, by the way, about this latest news, including from Steve, who writes, if either team moves to Kansas, there will be fires all over Missouri burning their expensive merchandise. They may say that now, but in the long run, will they see a dip in attendance because Missouri side fans would no longer support the teams?
Over the long run, no. I think that most fans understand that the metropolitan area can be involved in the teams if one or both go to Kansas. But I will say this. Mark Donovan seemed to indicate that the Chiefs, and we assume the Royals, are negotiating with both sides down to the specific clauses of a contract. That means when they pick a side, someone is going to be very, very angry that they invested all this time and energy to get the team to come over, only to have the team pick the other side. That's a dangerous, dangerous game, because you do lose, in essence, half of your constituency saying, hey, we were flummoxed by these teams looking for the best deal. I'm not sure that's the best strategy at all.
And then if they choose neither city, what city is going to want to be involved in this, because there's no clarity on what needs to be done?
On the 4th of July, President Trump signed his marquee domestic policy bill into law.
Are we ready?
50% of Kansas's rural hospitals are at risk of closing.
Well, it's frightening. 50% of those hospitals are providing services, critical services.
It's pretty bleak. I mean, we have a lot of facilities that are currently at risk of closing. We've seen a number of them close over the last 5-6 years. We expect there to be more.
Kansas Governor Laura Kelly and some of our local health leaders may not be happy, but it gained the support of all four Kansas and Missouri senators, even though some of them expressed major concerns about what it would mean to their states. Here's what Missouri Senator Josh Hawley said before the vote.
It ought to be just a basic foundational principle. It is wrong to cut health care for the working poor. And that's what we're talking about here with Medicaid. This is real Medicaid benefit cuts. I can't support that. No Republican should support that. We're the party of the working class, Manu. We need to act like it.
So he voted no? Oh, he voted yes. So what changed between that interview and the vote then, Yvette?
He voted yes, and nothing changed. However, it's interesting because we've had some comments about it's not his fault, it's the omnibus bill. The fault is a hundreds of pages long bill that there's nothing else you can do but vote yes or no. I would argue that you still have a choice and you still could have voted no.
Yeah, I mean, I think what changed, if you asked Senator Hawley or Senator Jerry Moran, is that there was this $50 billion fund added, which is purportedly to protect rural hospitals, and maybe it will help in some cases, but the rural hospitals themselves across Kansas and Missouri, according to our reporting over at KCUR, say that this isn't going to help. It's not going to solve the problems. Those hospitals are already making plans to shut down portions of their operations or to shut them down entirely based on the passage of this bill. So I think it's an open question whether the senators will have to pay for that politically, especially given that there is some delay in when it becomes.
Did Jerry Moran, the Kansas senator, feel that if he voted no, he might be primaried by President Trump?
No, I mean, perhaps. I mean, that's the implied threat for all of the Republicans. But anyone who thought that rank-and-file Republicans in the Senate would somehow oppose the Trump bill were really, paddling up the wrong stream. They were always going to vote for it. What I don't get quickly with Josh Hawley is, why did he take such a politically risky position on Medicaid that would clearly be pointed out as hypocrisy if he voted for the bill? He could have just stayed silent on Medicaid. Instead, he was in the New York Times. He was on talk shows.
But he said he'd made changes to it that would delay the effects of that in Missouri.
But he's talked a lot, as Brian points out, about this $50 billion fund for hospitals. That says nothing about the patients. It's about the hospitals, that money. It says nothing about the people who use Medicaid, particularly in Missouri where it was expanded. And when it takes effect, it won't take effect for a year.
Okay, we're getting a lot of questions from our viewers about this. They're confused about the impact of these cuts in Kansas and Missouri. Richard writes, how does removing people who are physically capable of working from the Medicaid program going to actually lead to the closing of rural hospitals, Brian?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Richard. The reality is that is a talking point that has been part of the support for cutting Medicaid that is not actually borne out by the facts. KFF had a study earlier this spring that said that studied Americans under the age of 65 who are on Medicaid. 64% of them are working. 12% of them who are not working because they're caregiving. 10% are not working because they've been injured. 7% are not working because they are in school as students. In fact, only 8% of Americans on Medicaid under the age of 65 are either retired or looking for work or not looking for work. That is a really small percentage. That's not who's affected the most by these Medicaid cuts. It's a broader cross-section of people, many of whom are working Americans who happen to be poor.
Now, Carla wants to know, does this new bill really cut entitlement programs or just push more of the costs onto states? If so, could a state like Kansas still pick up the tab for things like food assistance programs so no one has to go without?
You know, we talked to harvesters, and there's a lot of concern about this pushing down the road, who's going to pay for it. And it's, in their views, it's nearly impossible to make up the amount that's going to be taken away.
But we have states like from Colorado, I see, Georgia, maybe bringing back legislatures to fill the hole with state money. Any evidence you'd see a special session in Kansas and Missouri to do that?
Kansas has refused to expand Medicaid for decades, so the idea that somehow they'll step forward to help people on food stamps is a real stretch. And Missouri is in the same boat. There's in fact, Missouri is really in a bit of a pickle because they voted to the voters, as you know, Nick, put expanded Medicaid in the Constitution. And so you'll see a lot of argument that, hey, we can't fully fund schools, we can't do roads, we can't do a bunch of other things precisely because of Medicaid costs.
I also love, by the way, some of the more basic questions we receive from our viewers this week. Diana asks, do our representatives and senators really read the bills before they vote? And Gretchen writes, who actually writes these bills? These are almost 1,000 pages long. Yeah. Is that like Josh Hawley and Roger Marshall going into a little room and doing this?
I worked in Washington
for
the first part of my career, and you would be stunned to know how much national policy is determined by 23-year-old kids in yellow ties. They sit in rooms with boxes of pizza and they draft different parts of this bill. No legislator, no senator, no House member has read the entire document.
And resent the yellow tie comment.
With pens in their coat pockets. The people that they have, the staff and the things around them, those are the people that are supposed to read the bills and give them a summary of what it is. I think it's divided up to between two or three people in some cases, and they read it and they give them a summary. One of the things about Josh Hawley, though, is he's not up for re-election for 5 years. So if they're going to primary him, he would be primaried after Trump leaves office.
Yes.
So that shouldn't have been a deterrent as to why he changed his mind.
We should also point out that the major health effects of this big, beautiful bill won't be felt until after the midterm elections.
Right.
They won't go into effect until about 2027. Now, here's a story I didn't expect to see this week. Kansas City now considering renaming the new look KCI after President Harry Truman. According to the mayor's office, Mayor Lucas has met with representatives of the Truman Library Institute about renaming the terminal after the former president from Independence. This seems to have come out of the blue. Is the city serious about doing this, and is the idea being praised or panned this week, Yvette?
I think it's all about branding. And the question is Truman more well-known or recognized in Kansas City? And I might argue that there are a lot of people who don't know where Kansas City is. So I'm not quite sure what that's going to take. But I think it would be all the branding that's been done, the new airport, all the things that we've seen in the last couple of years would be undone to some degree if they would rename it.
I would say Sly James International Airport.
Well, we can't now because they have the pavilion at the convention center named after him.
They can have two or three things named after him. You know, they could do that. I would vote for that if it came to a vote.
Just quickly, first of all, if they name Sly James, the airport for Sly James, I'm leaving town. I'm just not. But because of his involvement with the airport. But there is a clue that maybe there's a fear that the Chiefs or Royals will leave the Truman Sports Complex, which is really the most major thing named for Harry Truman, and that there then needs to be a substitute for Truman of a significant stature, substantial stature, and that's why this talk is.
But does it need a name? But it doesn't need a name at all. I'm just thinking. I was looking, and you're our world traveler. You're at all airports all the time, going to different places. You think about Denver, Orlando, Los Angeles. They don't have special names. They're just the city name.
Well, and moreover, the cities where there is only one airport, and it is named after someone. I'm thinking of like New Orleans or. You don't probably remember who that's named after. Unless you need it to distinguish from some other airport, like maybe Bush Airport in Houston or Reagan Airport in Washington, D.C., if it's the only airport in town, I don't think people know the name anyway. So this is there may be lots of reasons to do this or not do it, but how it's going to be publicly known, I don't think is going to be greatly
affected. Mayor Lucas could kick the can down the road. The next mayor comes in and name it after him.
But that's true, too. But I did see they're trying to do this in advance of the World Cup coming to town, which is going to be in June of next year. So. There's not too much of a delay on this. When you put a program like this together every week, you can't get to every story grabbing the headlines. What was the big local story we missed?
For the first time since May, abortions resume in Kansas City after a judge clears away the last rules blocking the procedure. Meanwhile, the ACLU files a suit to remove an abortion ban from appearing on next year's Missouri ballot. The group says the question's language is deceptive. 8 years after his capture, he's finally heading to court. The man charged with killing six men on the Indian Creek Trail has finally been declared competent to stand trial. Not sure why she felt obliged to make a public announcement, but Kansas Governor Laura Kelly Kelly says she's divorced her husband after 40 years of marriage. Overland Park says yes to Black & Veatch, a unanimous council vote this week to give $250 million in tax breaks for the company to build a new corporate headquarters. Hickman Mills ousts its superintendent and brings back a familiar face to run things, former boss Dennis Carpenter. You can finally keep your shoes on at KCI as the TSA drops its nearly 20-year-old security rule. And if you're salivating over Bucky's opening its first Kansas City store, you're going to have to chill your heels. Construction now pushed back, so is its opening, now planned for 2027. It's going in near the Speedway in KCK.
Yvette, did you pick one of those stories or something completely different?
I have to say, those were some great choices. But I have to go back to the Big Beautiful Bill, because yes, now that it's been passed, and now we've been talking about health care, Medicaid, what else is in that bill? And we're going to begin to see a lot of ripple effects. And, for example, renewable energy and how it's going to affect that. I think there's so many stories yet to come. What else is in the bill?
Eric.
The superintendent for the Hickman Mills School District has had a pretty rocky road with the board there. I was surprised to see them, especially after the whistleblower incident information, I was surprised to see them wait this long to oust him. So I thought that was interesting. And then bringing Carpenter back in, that had kind of a rough road with them there for a minute as well. But it's a new board now, so things might be pretty smooth.
Brian.
I think the abortion rights case in Missouri, the restart of abortion procedures being offered in Kansas City, is a very significant event. Judge Jerry Jung ruling for a second time that those procedures can begin again. But let's not miss the other part of that story. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey has announced that he will again appeal that decision. It will surely end up before the Missouri Supreme Court. The last time they ruled on technical grounds, this time they're going to have to consider the merits.
Dave.
Vicki Schmidt, the Kansas Insurance Commissioner, has announced her plans to seek the Kansas gubernatorial nomination in the Republican Party. That's getting to be a very, very, very crowded field. Schmidt by far is the most moderate potential candidate for that office, and she is a statewide winner as insurance commissioner, so she'll have some support.
And on that, we will say our week has been reviewed, courtesy of the head of the Star editorial board, Yvette Walker, and KCY's Brian Ellison. From Next Page KC, Eric Wesson, and local news icon, Dave Helling. And I'm Nick Haynes, from all of us here at Kansas City PBS. Be well, keep calm, and carry on.